talk about a safety hazard.
This has got to stop. I mean, I think court storming's fine, but surely you can get security to the point where player safety's not involved like it is over here.
The NCAA should ban court storming in every conference across the board.
It's just not safe to have the court.
All right, everyone, welcome back to Storm the Court podcast. We are inching closer to the regular season. This is the last week without college basketball as the season starts next Friday. We're back as always, your hosts, Reegs and Terrence. Terrence, what's going on, man?
Not much, just recovering from a night of Hell in the Cell over here in Boston at the Garden. It was awesome.
Yeah, I was seeing some of your videos last night. You had some pretty ridiculous seats
alone. Yeah, yeah, like for pretty good price too. I encourage anyone to go to a WWE event. Like,
I agree.
Not like one of the house shows or whatever they call them now. Like a Raw or a pay per view. Those are so much fun. And I've tried telling people it's like no different than an EDM concert because it's a controlled environment. Like they know how to get your energy up. They know how to like calm you down. Right. They put in matches specifically for you to get a beer or take a piss. It's like, it's such an awesome atmosphere. Just pretend you're not an adult for 3 hours, and it's like the best time ever.
Yeah, we were texting yesterday. I've been to a SummerSlam. I've been to Raw each once. I got kind of hillbilly at SummerSlam because I had a dip in by some guy without teeth. So that was always, Indianapolis, of all places, too. So that was really entertaining.
Right.
But people always ask me, like, oh, how can you even watch wrestling? It's like, it's a male soap opera. It's a male drama.
It's
like, you watch Law & Order SVU for 19 hours,
right.
I can watch wrestling for 3.
Right, and I can just watch it occasionally. I don't have to watch it all the time to stay up. It's awesome.
No.
And
then that's the beauty of the WWE Network, is you can catch up on like what you need to know if you're going to a live event.
Yeah, and their social media, like, I know everyone, you can throw out like TV ratings for them as like, oh, they're declining TV ratings. Like, no. Their social media presence is off the charts because they know that if they post the must-see clip on YouTube, they're going to get a ton of people to view it, as opposed to sitting through 3 hours and watching it.
People
watched Goldberg's return live or watched it the next day, didn't have to wait 3 hours.
I watched it the next day.
Perfect.
I YouTubed it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the guy in your video who was like in a full costume. Looked like he had a crazy hand or like a Hulk hand type thing.
Which...
he was maybe like 3 or 4 rows in front of you?
Oh, there was a couple of kids in front of me. One was dressed as AJ Styles. The other one was dressed as Roman Reigns. So they're kind
of... It was hard to tell because it was from the back.
Right.
And I just assumed it was like a 40-year-old.
No. Those are two kids that were AJ Styles and Roman. So they were dressed like the full body gear. It's pretty funny.
All right, yeah. So we definitely recommend going to live wrestling events. Big shows. Don't even go to SmackDown. Go to Raw. I guess SmackDown now with the split, but Raw, SmackDown.
Or pay-per-views.
Yeah. So we'll go from what's considered not real to probably pissing some fan bases off as we discuss the ACC and Big East today. We're going to do a couple different previews throughout the, you know, for the conferences. We're going to knock them out, kind of two conferences in one episode, knocking out the 6 major conferences. Might touch on like the American and A-10 too. Just because there's, you know, obviously a lot of UConn, UMass, Dayton, and Rhode Island people that listen. So we'll touch on those later on. But today we'll hammer out the ACC and Big East. Two conferences that you look at kind of in different ways. First off, the ACC is essentially the old Big East.
Yeah, as far as like a depth, like when you're talking about how many bids you're going to get and all that, like, yeah, it pretty much is.
Yeah, and you look at hell, even some of the, you know, obviously the teams with Syracuse, Louisville, Pitt.
Right.
But this is the deepest conference in America this year, and the best conference in America year by
right, far. And they've even adopted some of the Big East stuff, like expanding conference games. I think they're up to 20 now, so this is going to be an absolute dogfight. And I mean, while it kind of...
Each once, I got kind of hillbilly at SummerSlam because I had a dip in by some guy without teeth. So that was always... Indianapolis, of all places, too. So that was really entertaining. But it's people always ask me, like, oh, how can you even watch wrestling? It's like, it's a male soap opera. It's a male drama.
Yeah.
It's like, you watch Law & Order SVU for 19 hours, I can watch wrestling for 3.
Right. And I can just watch it occasionally. I don't have to watch it all the time to stay up. It's awesome.
And that's the beauty of the WWE Network, is you can catch up on like what you need to know if you're going to a live event.
Yeah, and their social media, like, I know everyone, you can throw out like TV ratings for them as like, oh, they're declining TV ratings. Like, no, their social media presence is off the charts, because they know that if they post the must-see clip on YouTube, they're going to get a ton of people to view it, as opposed to sitting through 3 hours and watching it.
I enjoyed the guy.
How many people watched Goldberg's return live, or right, watched it the next day, didn't have to wait 3 hours?
I watched it the next day. I YouTubed it.
Yeah, perfect.
I enjoyed the guy in your video who was like in a full costume. It looked like he had a crazy hand, or like a Hulk hand type thing. He was maybe like three or four rows in front of you.
Oh, there was a couple of kids in front of me. One was dressed as AJ Styles. The other one was dressed as Roman Reigns.
All right. So it was hard to tell because it was from the back. And I just assumed it was like a 40-year-old.
No. Those are two kids that were AJ Styles and Roman. So they were dressed like the full body gear. It's pretty funny.
All right, yeah, so we definitely recommend going to live wrestling events, big shows. Don't even go to SmackDown. Go to Raw. I guess SmackDown now with the split, but Raw, SmackDown.
Or pay-per-view.
Or pay-per-views. Yeah. So we'll go from what's considered not real to probably pissing some fan bases off as we discuss the ACC and Big East today. We're going to do a couple different previews throughout for the conferences. We're going to knock them out. Kind of two conferences at one going, or two conferences in one episode, knocking out the six major conferences. Might touch on like the American and A-10 too, just because there's obviously a lot of UConn, UMass, Dayton, and Rhode Island people that listen. So we'll touch on those later on. But today we'll hammer out the ACC and Big East. Two conferences that you look at kind of in different ways. First off, the ACC is essentially the old Big East.
Yeah, as far as, like, a depth.
Right.
Like, when you're talking about how many bids you're going to get and all that, like, yeah, it pretty much is.
Yeah, and you look at hell, even some of the, obviously the teams with Syracuse, Louisville, Pitt.
Right.
But this is the deepest conference in America this year, and the best conference in America year by far.
Right, and they've even adopted some of the Big East stuff, like expanding conference games. I think they're up to 20 now, so this is going to be an absolute dogfight. I mean, while it kind of takes away from, big non-conference games. You do get to see, North Carolina play Virginia twice as opposed to once. Right. And
they're the one conference that can get away with it.
Right, like Syracuse playing Duke twice a year and all that. So you get all those games that you want to see. Duke and North Carolina can play twice a year every year.
Yeah.
But it sucks when you have a team like Virginia or a team like that's trying to get a bid in the middle of that pack, and they're stuck playing the cellar dwellers like Boston College twice a year, as opposed to maybe getting a chance to get Duke on their home floor, North Carolina on the home floor. So yeah, it's going to be really fun to watch that unfold, because I look at every conference in like tiers. I think there's contenders. I think there's those next kind of guys that will push those two
tournament
teams.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of middle of the pack, and I think the middle of the pack, I think outside of three teams in the ACC, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, and Boston College, I think every single team has a legitimate case to make the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely. And here's the other thing. Wake could surprise some people. I don't think they're going to make an NCAA tournament, but they have talent on their roster with Brian Crawford, John Collins.
Right.
Darrell Moore was a highly, highly regarded recruit.
I feel bad like grouping them into that bottom three with Georgia Tech and Boston College. They're so much better than those two teams,
right.
And this way, like, what they lose, like 11, 12, how many games in a row did they lose last year?
Yeah,
and they're so much better. They're so much better than those two teams.
Yeah, I mean, they last year, you look at them, they went to LSU, got a win earlier in the season. They pushed Xavier over Christmas break when Xavier was undefeated and in the top 10. So there's definitely talent on that Wake roster, but yeah, it's almost a shame because, I grew up a Wake Forest fan. I'd like to see them be back to how they were in the 90s and the early to mid-2000s. And it's like they finally start getting talent coming in from recruiting, and they're just like a huge step back this year.
Yeah,
because they're just not wins to have.
And they still lose Devin Thomas and Cody
Miller-McIntyre.
So you lose two of your three top scorers. But like we said, I think we all agree that Wake Forest is probably the third worst team in that conference. And then we discussed on the NBC ACC preview podcast that February 11th, Georgia Tech versus Boston College might be the worst high major game this year.
Yeah, really what they should do is just throw in, you know how there's a Champions Classic? Maybe throw in, like, the shit classic with throwing Rutgers, Georgia Tech, Boston College, St. John's, DePaul.
St. John's is trending up, though.
They are trending up. But you could rotate, I guess, DePaul, they're always shitty. And then maybe someone from out west.
Jesus, how many listeners did we lose within the first segment of this?
We talked Someone's about pro not going to be happy.
We talked about pro wrestling, and you just created the opposite of the Champions Classic.
Or what I like to be called NFL Sunday whenever the Patriots aren't in the game, or Patriots-Giants Super Bowl.
I don't understand how people watch football if you're not a Patriots fan. Well, it's awful.
As a Giants fan, I just know there's one team that they can't beat, and that's the Giants.
Yeah.
Fair. So back to basketball, ACC, like you said. So who is in? You said the tiers that you kind of have, where it's contenders. You have contenders, middle of the pack, and then the bottom three. Is that how you had it labeled?
Yeah, I just think those last three teams are the only ones I wouldn't consider to have a realistic shot at making the tournament this year. If you wanted, like, I would say Duke's first, and I honestly would just put them. I think everyone agrees Duke's first. And
everyone agrees
Duke's first in the nation, so it's no surprise. And then after that, I think there's a couple teams that I would put in that next tier. So Duke's obviously the favorite, and then as far as contenders to sort of finish at the top, even with Nichols, he's suspended for one game. So Virginia. I think Louisville could be pretty good because there's sophomores. If all those sophomores can make a jump, obviously you got to, with the talent North Carolina has, it's just a matter of if those guys step up into those roles. And then Virginia Tech would be the last of those four teams, I would say, could round out the top five.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I had, you know, we're recording this here on Monday about 6 o'clock. My ACC blog came out today. So my first five, my standings were Duke, Virginia, Louisville, Carolina, Virginia Tech. So same boat. I'm high on Louisville this year. Like you said, I think Mitchell makes that jump. I think Dangadel makes that jump. And I just have a ton of faith in Patino. I mean, last year, people kind of forget that they were trending up until the whole Hooker fiasco came down.
Right.
I mean, they were probably going to end up...
The self-imposed sanctions,
right.
All that.
I mean, hell, they probably would have been a top four, top five seed in the NCAA tournament the way they were playing. So that's a team that I think people are kind of overlooking. You know, everyone looks at UNC and it's like, well, they made the championship game last year, so they have to be good again this year. Not that they won't be good, but you lose Bryce Johnson, who, I mean, he did everything for that team.
Right.
Except guard Chris Jenkins on the last play.
Yep.
And Marcus Page, who, yeah, he was inconsistent senior year, but it's still one of those guys that I think Roy just felt comfortable with. Now, they do get Joel Berry, who was the best guard on that team.
That's what I was going to mention. You have Joel Berry, so it's like, I think we can all agree that the point guard spot is solidified with Joel Berry. I think he's going to be one of the top point guards in the league this year. But it's all like, it's just like you're depending on people at North Carolina for this year that, like, you haven't been so, like, sold on yet. Justin Jackson, we haven't been sold on
Prime
him completely.
Example.
Could he be the number one? Could Kenny B. Meeks make the sort of jump Bryce Johnson did in his last year? It's like that's the big – those are just big questions.
They're two guys who came into UNC with high expectations.
Right.
You've always were sitting there going, all right, this is the year. Kennedy Meeks especially, as he's going to be a senior, but it's sitting there going, okay, now is the year that he finally gets to be the – like a Sean May.
And that's why I like Louisville's potential.
Yeah.
You know, as a group of young guys that we all saw glimpses of, they kind of got thrown into the fire early on because it was a young team made up with the two grad transfers. And you got to imagine they're coming in a little bit hungry because they were, you know, because of the actions of people there when they were probably, what, in middle school or early in high school, they weren't able to go to the NCAA tournament that first year. I imagine they take a chip on their shoulder, and you know, to be completely fair, North Carolina, I imagine they have a chip on their shoulder,
right?
Because of the way things ended last year.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to watch those two teams because you could see it going either way. Where it's you know, does Carolina have that hangover from the championship game where it just let it lingers around. Maybe they lose a couple close games early and now it's in their head. Shit, can we actually win a close one? For Louisville, same type of thing, you know. Yeah, the NCAA came out, what, four level one violations, but there still hasn't been any penalties. It's going to be okay. It's just going to be another year where we're hitting our stride come January, but we don't get to play in any postseason games. I don't think that happens at all. So it's going to be interesting watching those two teams for that reason, where there is that, well, on one side they have the chip, but on the other side they still have what happened less than a year ago.
Right, and you know, while we talked about, we spent some time talking about those two teams. I think everyone's kind of intrigued by Virginia Tech this year because it's that year. You know, it's Buzz Williams finally. You know, in that year three.
Yeah, he got his system in place.
Yeah, he's got his guys in place. Those transfers he got in have started to gel. The only question mark I have is I just think they're going to be small, and like there's right. this small ball like the. You know, teams can figure that out. And a lot of teams aren't necessarily big. A lot of teams will play small ball. I imagine you see Duke play a little bit small. I bet you see Jason Tatum at the four at times this year for Duke. But, you know, the fact that, like, Blackshear, who they're relying on this year, is, you know, might miss the year, you know, with an injury, it could be that really hurts their depth. But I love their guard play.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's very telling to me about Virginia Tech is last year they led the nation in free throw attempts per field goal attempts. So they get to the line a ton, which, again, when you're talking about size and whatnot, you can, if you can attack the rim and draw fouls, you're making them pay because you got Seth Allen, Zach Ledee, who, I mean, they're one of the best duos that people just don't talk about in college basketball. Now, this year, there might, you know, there might be like the Jahron Blossom games of this year where they become the worst kept secret where everyone's overhyping them or talking about how they're underrated and they become a little bit overrated type deal. So that's telling to me is just, you know, it's a weird stat, but the fact that they can get to the line by being small, I mean, in the college game, that means a ton.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a reason why, that's another reason why a lot of people peg them as, you know, if they're not in the top 25 in the preseason for some people, they're right on the cusp of it. Right. And that's why a lot of people peg them as a sleeper. I mean, and when we talk about this next tier of teams, I see it shuffling any which way, which leads us to the next group, which is even bigger, and that could finish any way like you can think about it. When you talk about consistent NCAA tournament teams, Syracuse, Miami, Notre Dame, NC State, Florida State, Pitt, Clemson.
Yeah.
Like, that's a tough group. Like, I'm telling you, like those are 12 teams.
Yeah, and you can tell me any of those guys, anyone you just listed, pretty much anyone you just listed, I could see finishing third or fourth in the conference in a one season.
Right, I mean, like, what would stop, you know, Jaquan Newton from having a breakout year?
Right.
Or Larinaga, when we've seen other point guards do the same. I mean, I know Bray's going up against it with Demetrius Jackson gone, but he still has some quality guys.
There's
know.
Always a guy that makes a jump at Notre Dame. Jaron Grant, it was Demetrius Jackson. It should be VJ Beachum this year.
Right. They still got Mastoria. So, like, they got some guys. And then you can't look past NC State. They have one of the best players in the country.
Dennis Smith is – he's projected – you know, when you look at, like, SI.com, they went through and kind of used, like, their advanced stats method similar to KenPom to project stats, and he's projected to put up stats better than Chris Paul's freshman year at Wake Forest.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That's just the when you hear that, it just kind of makes you stop for a second. Like, wait a minute. Chris Paul was really fucking good.
It's not just him. They have the Omar Yurtseven, who's, we found out today, is suspended for 9 games. He'll be back mid-December. And if you look at that schedule, they don't play too much. The competition.
More
not
importantly, terrible. He's Illinois, back for conference play.
Right. So they don't have him for Illinois and Boston University. Those are the two best teams they play. Like, you know, Boston University is a quality mid-major, and then, you know, you can't look past a high major in Illinois, especially this is a critical year for Gross, and we'll get into that in a following podcast in the next couple of weeks. But even outside of Yurtseven and Smith, who have the NBA buzz, you still have talent on that roster. There's Terry Henderson.
Maverick Rowan can shoot the ball.
There's Abdul Malik Abu. You know, you have BJ Anya. There's talent there. So this is a really good team on paper. It's just a matter of, like, if can Godfrey – and Godfrey's had talented teams.
I mean, he made the Sweet 16 2 years ago.
Right, and he had a talented team a couple years ago when they had their preseason favorites. They had that team with Cap Barber that had a ton of talent that knocked off Villanova in the round of 32 a couple years ago, and that was a talented team. They should not have been an 8 seed. They were much better on paper than an 8 seed.
Weren't they even a 9 seed? Didn't they?
Yeah, they were the 8-9.
They beat LSU when Johnny Jones went.
Yeah, they were one of the 8 or 9 teams. So, yeah, but that's a really good team. Florida State, you know, you wonder how many, you want to
talk about a team with talent? I was high on Florida State last year. I thought Xavier Raton Mays was going to be, you know, first team all conference, really make that freshman to sophomore jump because he had the strong freshman year. Dwayne Bacon came on, Malik Beasley was there. This year, it's almost the same where Xavier Raton Mays, you know, he can now, doesn't have to worry about scoring the balls more because Jonathan Isaac comes in.
Right.
And, Isaac, a top 10 recruit.
It's a matter of how they share the ball, how they work together. And you plug in Terrence Mann for Beasley. Bacon's still there. So, you know, I think I've always liked Terrence Mann as a player. You know, he seems like he's an unselfish kid. He's a real hard team player. So I think maybe him in the starting lineup can sort of help facilitate, at least help facilitate with Raton Mays. And so, yeah, that's another team that, honestly, they got to make the tournament. When's the last time they've been in there? And they've been getting talent here.
Yeah, I know for sure 2011 they lost to VCU in the Sweet 16. They had to have made it since then.
I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, they made it the next year. So they haven't been there since 2012.
Leonard Hamilton got an extension.
Right. So maybe he doesn't have to make the tournament this year. But then you look at Pitt, which I feel like this Pitt team.
But another duo in Young and Artist that's good enough to win games for you.
In Shelton Jeter.
Yeah.
The point guard role, that's going to be the major concern. But I think the front court is good enough to do exactly what Pitt basketball did under Jamie Dixon, which is make the NCAA tournament and be home on Monday after the first weekend.
Yeah, and that's what Stallings did at Vanderbilt.
Just not as much. Just not as consistent.
Right. But, I mean it's... It's nice that Stallings can come in and take a team with two guys in Young and Artists, experienced, talented, and they should be a 9 or 10 seed in the NCAA tournament, maybe win a game, but like you said, they'll be home Monday, and Stallings can start working on his system.
And then maybe just going down a little bit further down, maybe this is the one team that's kind of a stretch as far as their NCAA tournament homes, but I think Jaron Blossom game is so good, he could sneak Clemson into a couple of into the tournament, and they won a couple games last year. Granted, it was all on their home floor.
But it wasn't really at their true home because they played.
That's true, but it's still not traveling as much. But I think it's a matter of some of the transfers they got in.
Right. I think Elijah Davis coming in December is huge.
That helps. That's a boost. They have the kid from Robert Morris, and then Shelton Mitchell. So they have he was a highly touted point guard, coming out of high school. So if those guys could just gel together, they've all been together for at least one semester, because Elijah came in mid-year. So it just depends on how those guys mesh on the floor. It's a stretch, but I think Blossom game's in for a big year. I think he's in for an All-American caliber year, maybe not first team, but maybe third team, honorable mention, things like that. So I think Clemson could figure out their way, and they'll at least cause some chaos at some point this season. And we've skipped over one team, and I'll let you talk about it since you're constantly talking about it on Twitter with their fans.
Yeah, obviously, there's a lot of Syracuse fans that listen to the show, that read the site, follow me, whatnot. But it's not that I'm down on them. It's just that there's questions. I mean, there's questions about this team that. Specifically for me, it's their point guard play.
That's where it starts.
That's right. Andrew White is not a traditional point guard.
No,
Frank Howard is not a great point guard.
No, he's not a point guard.
John Gillen, again, not a great point guard.
No, they're not like these aren't like the point guards you want.
And
yeah, they're talented. They're talented scorers, but they're not point guards.
Right.
Just last year, Bijanae wasn't a point guard, but he just happened to be really talented, and he was also a little bit older, so he's a little bit more experienced. He was just really talented.
And he was also a hell of a passer.
He's a gifted passer. Right, he's a willing passer.
But I don't see that with any of these guys where it's like that's a guy who can pass the ball. But when you look at this conference, look at the point guards. I mean, when you go, and the only team that can overcome this is Duke,
right?
Because their makeshift point guard is Grayson Allen.
Yeah, when you run down the list, you got Grayson Allen is the makeshift point guard.
You got London Dennis Prentice, Smith,
London Prentice, Joel Berry Jr. You know,
Bryant Crawford.
I mean, Quinn Snyder, what is this? His third year, so he's at least got experience. Jaquan Newton. Like Smith, Xavier Thane Mays. There's point guard questions at Pitt, but yeah, Virginia Tech. Like, yeah, the guard play is important.
Everybody has a point guard except for Duke, but they had this last year too because Thornton just didn't play a ton. You know, Thornton was a weird situation with them last year. Ball was in Allen's hands most of the time. A year ago, it's going to be the same this year. At Syracuse, you go from losing Jabinejay to...
And Cooney
to, okay, yeah, Andrew White. He's a nice player. I really like Andrew White's game. He's better on the wing.
Right.
Like, it's just one of those...
You also remember, like, two of those guys you're adding in your backcourt are new. How do we know, like, how they're going to mesh and all of that?
Exactly.
And then, again, Franklin Howard's a sophomore who played, you know, he wasn't playing too much. He worked his way into getting some more minutes later in the year. But, like, they are talented. They're just – it's just fair to question,
especially, you know, last year, you know, everyone wants to say, well, they were in the Final Four last year. They were a 10 seed that got hot for four games last year.
Right. And, like,
they almost should have missed the tournament.
Right. And, you know, and again, in this league – it's going to come down to point guard play and rebounding, and those are two big questions. They were 10th in rebounding last year in the ACC. Yes, they had Pascal Tchouchou, who I think will be more of an impactful, blocking shots, and you know maybe that allows the guys with great length on the perimeter to sort of take some gambles out there on the zone because you have a 7'2" guy protecting the rim, but still. They're going to need to be better rebounding this year.
Right, and what makes it weird is how they run their zone. They like to bring their wings up.
Especially with the length they have again this year.
Right, so you have Lydon on, you know, you have Lydon on one wing. I guess you might have White on the other on the other wing, or
right,
Gillen. I don't know who they're going to put on the other, you know, how they're going to set up defensively, but you got Lydon for sure on the one wing. They're going to bring those guys up high, you know, free throw line extended.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes it a little bit easier to go get the offensive rebounds. I don't care how good you are running that zone like that, especially with your guys high. It just is tough to rebound out of.
Yeah, I think what fans don't understand is like we can be critical of the team or question the team. Doesn't mean we don't like them. Like
I think they're like the 20th best team in the country.
Right, and that's pretty fair. I think that's pretty consistent with where a lot of people have them.
Right.
Like, we have them as a tournament team. I had the same thing. We talked about it last week with the VCU fans with me. It's like I think you're the third best team in a multi-bid league, a league that in recent past has gotten 5 teams and 6 teams in the NCAA tournament. I think it's fair to say that I think your team is pretty good. I just think the team like Dayton and the team like Rhode Island, who like Rhode Island was in both rankings and Dayton received votes.
Yeah,
I just think they're a tad bit better than you.
And I think, you know, with Syracuse, you're the 6th best team in the best conference we've seen heading into a season in years.
Yeah.
In years.
Like, yeah.
You're still going to be a top 4 or 5 seed in the tournament.
Right.
I just don't, without that point guard play and without the talent like Duke has, I just don't think you're a national title contender.
And moving forward, they got to get a point guard. Like the class of 2017... Like point guards are dropping like flies. Like even in like this state, the ones like the two I know the best, you know, they both just committed. Mekhi Ashton Langford to UConn, and then Tremont Waters, or he's from Connecticut, but he's going to Georgetown. Wabisa Bede is going to Virginia Tech, and these aren't the Trevon Duval guys either.
Right.
So they need to get Quade Green, who they've been pressing hard to get. They need a point guard at some point. And I know things kind of got a little messed up. Messed up's not the right word. He just outplayed his expectations a couple years ago with Tyler Ennis. Caleb Joseph was supposed to be his understudy. He got thrown into the role a little bit too soon. And it just sort of created this ripple effect that they luckily were able to patch together with Bisonnet, but I think it might come to bite him in the ass this year.
Yeah, and it just, again, when you look at the conference as a whole, you can't just skate by. You're not going to go get 10 wins because you have talent on the wing.
Right.
It's just too hard this year. So that's how I feel about Syracuse. Again, it's not, people want to bash me because I had Boeheim ranked really low last year when it came to Sweet 16 coaches rankings. But again, Boeheim is a weird guy to kind of rank because he runs one defense his entire career, and it's almost I just hate zone defenses too, unless it's like a 1-3-1 or a 1-2-2 trap. It's just a 2-3 zone that he gets a ton of athletic wings that he likes to bring up high, which makes it a little interesting, so it's a little bit matchup to it.
So basically you're saying you hate Syracuse.
Yeah, exactly. I hate Syracuse. They're that team that, hey, they could finish third and I wouldn't be shocked.
No.
Or they could finish 10th and I wouldn't be shocked.
And you could say that about a lot of teams in this conference, which makes that middle, it's tough to call 6 through 12 like the middle of the pack, but that's really what it is. It's just insane how deep this conference is.
It is. So, okay, we'll go kind of rapid fire. Who's your player of the year, Grayson Allen, for the conference?
Yeah, that's just the safe pick. It's Grayson Allen.
All right, since it's loaded this year,
Could be Blossom game. Right. There are some guys out there that could be in the mix, but maybe Joel Berry, London Prentice, Austin Nichols, any of those guys, but everyone's going to go with Grayson Allen.
Yeah, you have to. Who's your freshman of the year in the ACC? Well, this is obviously the one conference where there's a ton of options where you could go, but I think there's kind of...
I think Dennis Smith.
Yeah.
Because I just think he's gonna have the ball in his hands all the time. Well, they're going to ask a lot of him.
And then you look at the injuries to Tatum. Tatum's going to miss a couple games, but still.
But he's not the first option.
Not the first option. Giles is out for 6 weeks, so...
Yeah, that kind of takes him off.
He kind of eliminates him.
Kind of takes them off the table a little bit.
Yeah, I think, and for me, it was like Dennis Smith is like number two in my player of the year rankings for the ACC, if you ask me who, just because, again, like you said, he has the ball in his hand so much. He's going to score. He's going to put up a ridiculous assist line, too.
Right.
So you kind of talk about that. Do you think 12 get into the tournament?
I think that's tough, but I think 12 teams have a case to get in.
Right.
When it comes down to it, I think they match the 11. I think that's been the record.
It's too hard to envision it not.
Yeah, like I said, in some of these teams, like Pitt, I think is good enough to be a 10 seed. Like Florida State, so I'm not saying like all these teams are going to be around.
Some will be in the play-in games.
Yeah, exactly. They're and with the 20 games, they're going to have Pitt's going to have an opportunity to get a ranked opponent on their home floor in February,
right,
and pull off an upset that looks good in the eyes of the committee. So they'll have opportunities, because it's so deep, they'll have opportunities to beat ranked opponents all the time, those teams that are on the bubble. So that strengthens, them.
Who's the one coach you kind of mentioned with Leonard Hamilton, where you said Florida State has to make the tournament this year? Do you think there's one coach that's truly kind of on the, I hate using the term, but truly like on the hot seat or that has to win this year?
It's got to be Jim Christian. They went 0-18. I'm looking at everyone else. Like we talked about, every other team's in the mix to be, in the tournament. Maybe Brownell at Clemson. How many years has he been there? And I think he kind of needs to show that there's some improvement there. But I think the transfers is a good depending on how well the transfers play this year, that might be a good sign for him, because they'll have some pieces moving forward. But I'll go with Christian again. It's kind of the safe pick. I know he's only been there for 2 years, but you can't lose. You can't go winless in a high major conference. Like you just can't do
two
it.
2 years in a row.
And it's nothing they can do about it. Like, their facilities aren't up to par with the rest of it. Like, they're in an area that does not support college sports.
Right.
So, Chapel Hill and Chestnut Hill could not be different places when it comes to basketball culture and support.
It's insane when you think about
they're two different worlds in the same conference.
Right. But when you look at the talent that's come out of Massachusetts with prep schools and the prep school scene,
you know, granted, he did get AJ Turner, who I think is going to be a good player.
Right.
He got him out of the prep school scene.
But the way they recruit, you think you're talking about, I mean, how they got recruited by Harvard.
Yeah, the last game I went to was several years ago, last BCE game I went to in person. And I'm looking at their starting five, and it's like, okay, Quebec, California, Florida. And then I think the other one was from Massachusetts.
Was it like the Jared Dudley era?
No, this was when they still had Ryan Anderson and what's his face? What's the kids? Why am I blanking on his name? Olivier Hanlon.
Oh, yeah.
So they had those two guys. And I just looked at that roster like, how are you not tapping into this? Especially when you're coming from like prep schools like Phillips Andover and, you know, like Northfield on Herm, like schools that like they want, like, you know, they're big academic institutions, right. And like Boston College, figured itself to be one. Like, it makes no sense, but that's, you know, it kind of went down that rabbit hole. But I would say Christian, just because they need to show some sort of progress. You can't have 0-18.
No, you can't.
It just makes the Skinner, like the Al Skinner firing, looks like just so much more ridiculous.
Right. All right, so that's ACC. Obviously, the best conference in America this year. I don't think there's any question about that. We'll talk about the Big Ten here in next episode, but it's not touching the ACC to me. Transition to the Big East, which got what it needed last year. The knock on the Big East was it's not one of these Power Six conferences. Their schools.
It's not the old Big East.
They can't win in March. They beat each other, so it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Villanova kind of took out their dick and just slapped it on everyone's face.
that's one way to put it.
That's kind of what they did.
You look at, and you can say, oh, it was a fluke win. You know, it was a close game, but they kicked the shit out of some of the best teams in the country.
They beat Oklahoma by 300.
They beat them by 300 after they had lost by like 40 to them earlier in the year.
Yes.
And they beat Kansas pretty, it was a close game,
but Villanova completely outplayed Kansas that
year.
They beat the shit out of Miami.
They curb stomped some of these teams.
Yeah, they beat the shit out of Miami.
And can I just like go on a little bit of like a rant here? I understand the whole, like, the last couple of years we've been like, oh, Jay Wright can't win in March.
He's like, got to be home.
We're saying it like 5 years removed from a Final Four run, which I just never understood. And I think there was that one, what was it, the where they got scared by St. Mary's. That was one incident.
They lost to St. Mary's.
That's what it was. St. Mary's. They got
scared by Robert Morris.
That's what it was. And then they lost to St. Mary's. I was thinking to myself, St. Mary's was too low to be the 15 seed that year. They were the 10 seed.
Yeah.
So that was one incident. I think that was right after the Final Four year.
That was then they 2010.
That was right after the Final Four year. Yeah. Then they had a couple down years. And then when they sort of took over this new Big East, they lost in 2014 to UConn. UConn beat everybody in that tournament. They beat Michigan State, who was one of the favorites. They beat Virginia, who was the number one. They beat Florida, who was the number one team and hadn't lost in 4 months. And then they beat Kentucky, who was the preseason number one. They beat everybody. So I don't understand that criticism, because UConn was just out of this world. And then the next year, it happens. I'm not trying to defend it. They played like crap against NC State. But I never understood why Villanova and Jay Wright took that sort of label when they had been to a Final Four. I think the criticism comes from the fact that they were the flagship of the Big East, but they had no help as far as like, because Xavier and Creighton and Butler still sort of had it, even though Butler was coming up, they had, you know,
two Final Four runs.
But like Villanova had to carry the old Big East with them, because Georgetown and St. John's just weren't what they need to be. Like, Georgetown needs to be great, and St. John's needs to be good.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And Marquette.
And Marquette. But just like Georgetown and St. John's and Villanova are the three originals. And right. I'm telling you, Georgetown, they don't need to be 1980s Georgetown, but they need to be great.
Right. They need to be the mid to late 2000s.
They got to stop being the punchline to NCAA tournament upset jokes. Yep. You know, like how many times they've been bounced by double-digit seeds the last couple of years. I mean, I think they finally won one 2 years ago, but you know, they turned around.
Florida Gulf Coast, Ohio U.
Yeah, they turned around and they don't make the tournament this past year despite having some talent on that roster. But, yeah, it's just my little rant about that.
What really helped Villanova, besides take away the championship, what really helped Villanova was the rise of Xavier. Like you said, Xavier kind of had to get over the, oh, look, they're that A-10 school that
they had mild success in the tournament. They had a couple of Sweet 16 runs a bunch of times
2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
The second year in the Big East. Last year, they're the number two seed, top five ranking for part of the year. This year, they're preseason top. They're 7 or 8 in the AP. I forget off the top of my head. So the rise of Xavier to kind of be that second tier or that second that helped them. And then, you know, Butler's always going to be respected.
Right.
As a program, no matter what happens.
Because they have great fan base.
When you look at Brad Stevens, even at the Celtics, it's like, oh, yeah, he came from Butler.
Right.
And then you know, you look at the back-to-back championship games, even though one was the worst title game ever.
You got Hinkle as a huge selling point.
Yep.
You're right about Xavier. And I think, and if you look at the recruiting class, Xavier's recruiting like a high major. They're gonna be around as long as Chris Mack is around. They're gonna
that recruiting class for next year, which is really good. What they did, his name's blanking on me right off the top of my head. Is it Scruggs that they got?
Yeah, Paul Scruggs.
He's a top 20, top 30 recruit.
Yeah, and he was on the Under Armour Association circuit. I'm telling you, Mack and three coaches, all three, every single game, they were locked in on this kid. First row. Every single game, Mac and all three assistants. It was unreal.
Is he from Indianapolis?
Yeah, he's from the Indiana. He played for the Indy Hoosiers.
So that's only about a 2-hour drive from Xavier.
Right.
So it's one where he knows, hey, look, I can recruit Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Columbus.
And he's looking at Edmund Sumner kind of as himself, you know, and a very athletic, big lead guard who's, you know, kind of transitioning to the point guard role.
So the Big East this year, again, you kind of have the tiers like you talked about. Unfortunately and fortunately, it kind of went what we just talked about. There's still not that bump from the Georgetowns and the St. Johns of the world or even the Marquettes of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But those schools that joined the Big East have made that jump. We've seen Butler do it. We've seen Xavier do it. This year it's Creighton.
Yes, and I was just about to say that Creighton – this is their chance to prove that it was more than, you know, the Doug McDermott.
Yeah, and you know, before that, like, the Kyle Korver and whatnot.
But Doug McDermott, like, took that program. I mean, they were ranked. He was the National Player of the Year. Korver was never the National Player of the Year. He was a good player. No, but
they had that win in the, what was it, like the 03, because I was in high school, 3-04 tournament.
Right.
I just remember the one guy, I don't remember his name, but I remember he wore 23 and he ran around with, like, an airplane after they won.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, they've had moments, but this is their chance to really sort of affirm their place. Like, we're more than just those great years of Doug McDermott. Yep. So they have arguably the best backcourt in that conference, one of the best in the nation with Mo Watson and Marcus Foster. Marcus Foster, who got ran out of K-State, was an all Big 12 performer. So that's just how good
he averaged over 15 a game as a freshman.
Just how good he is. And if he's any indication of what, like, you know, McDermott can do with transfers. Like, look what he did with Mo. Mo was an undersized point guard from BU.
Right.
And granted, he was great at BU the second he stepped on campus. But, like, he went from a guy that people thought, okay, he could be pretty competitive to being, you know, one of the best point guards in that league last year.
Yeah.
And that's just because McDermott's just in his ear every day during that year off. You're the guy, like, just building your confidence up and just working with you. You got to imagine he's doing the same with Marcus Foster, and you got to imagine Marcus Foster is going to make the most of a second chance.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Creighton's one of those teams that, again, they're the third. Everyone agrees they're the third best in this conference, but they're a top 25 team.
top 20.
Yeah. And I think the big reason of that is because of Marcus Foster, and he's in a situation where he is comfortable. Some of those guys, McDermott and a couple of assistant coaches, they recruited him in the past. Right. He's comfortable with them. He's known them for years. I know there's going to be a knock that Jeffrey Grozel isn't there. He was a pretty stable force when he was finally healthy for a full year. But people forget Justin Patton, like a top 50 recruit or something like that from Omaha. He could be a pretty good at 7 feet tall. He could fill that void.
Well, and then you get a guy like Isaiah Zierden.
But he's got to stay healthy.
That can. But again, but if he, when he's healthy, he can shoot the shit out of the ball.
Oh, absolutely.
And that just leaves that lane open even more. You know, that just helps Watson get to the, you know, drive, kick. You got Foster, you got Zierden. There's a ton of options for Creighton this year if they're healthy.
Right.
Which is going to be the question mark.
I think Zierden needs to be healthy. Patton's one of the X factors as well, to a lesser extent of Marcus Foster. I think Ronnie Harrell could have a pretty good year, you know, in addition to those guys. But, yeah, I think Creighton by sort of default almost is the third best team because
Where is it after them?
Isaiah Whitehead comes back. That's the third best team, but I think they're the fourth best team.
Right, right. And to me, they kind of fall into that group of the four to six, four to seven teams where Butler could finish fourth, Seton Hall could finish fourth.
And you look at that team at Seton Hall, and they're all like breakout candidates: Dino, right, Angel, and Desi. I've seen like Kadeen Carrington, and Angel Delgado. I think they got honorable mention preseason honorable mention honors from the Big East. And I'm thinking to myself, I think Desi Rodriguez is the best player on that team.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he showed it. Like he showed glimpses of it last year. He's absolute, you know, force when he gets up in the air and attacks the rim. I think defensively they'll be pretty solid. I liked what I saw with Dino last year, sort of switching that point guard role, like as the secondary ball handler, to the Whitehead, who was the lead guard.
And man, think about where Seton Hall was 2 years ago.
Yeah, you know,
with the whole Seton Hall Whitehead situation.
And... Yeah, I mean, and just not being relevant, and right, you know, just banking on some of these this big recruiting class. I never will criticize a kid for going to the NBA. Go get paid.
Absolutely.
But I would have loved to see Whitehead another year with this team. I think it would be pretty special. But
who would you compare them to if Whitehead comes back? They got to be top 15 in the country, maybe.
They're definitely, I think, a top 20 team because I think they're better.
They surpass Creighton as the third.
Right. Right. So they would be a real tough team to play because then you got, you know, a go-to guy and a bunch of guys that are capable of stepping up into huge roles like I think they are this year.
Right.
And then rounding out, we kind of talked about with the ACC. You know, obviously it's to a lesser extent because it's a smaller conference, but that next tier after Xavier and Villanova could really shuffle any which way, maybe even a little bit after Creighton, I think, because we think we're all going to sort of – I think Sharpie in, Villanova, Xavier, maybe – erasable pen, Creighton at three, and then the rest of it is just up for grabs, in my opinion, when it comes down to Seton Hall, Butler, Marquette, and Georgetown.
Yeah.
Like, reluctantly, I picked Georgetown to finish second last year, and man, was that a bad pick. But I don't even – damn it, do I do it again? Do I let them round out my top five? Because that's what I've sort of been battling with.
I don't know. Do you trust them? To me, that's the question. It's, can I trust Georgetown?
Yeah, I mean, they have so much talent on that roster.
Yep.
And they have guys like Seton Hall does who are capable of breaking out. I think Copeland could be much better than the numbers like he's put up. I think LJP could be a lot better. I think Derrickson and Govan on the front line, that's the best front line in the league, could be an absolute nightmare to face because Govan on the block, Derrickson's ability to step out and shoot. They add Pryor from Robert Morris, so they have another scoring option. I'm gonna do it. I think George.
You're putting them five.
I will put them in. I'll have them round out the top five.
I'm gonna make the same mistake as you. I had Marquette, I think, third in the conference last year.
Yeah,
I'll put them fifth. I was just all in on the Ellenson train last year.
Right. No, and it wasn't just Ellenson. They had, you know, a great recruiting class coming in with Cheatham as well. And, Sandy Cohen had a year under his belt, and then you had some more experienced guys like Dwayne Wilson and Luke Fisher. So it seemed like they had the right blend.
I had them third last year.
A lot of people were bullish on them. I was a little bit more like, I like this team. I just don't like them right now. They're probably maybe a year away.
I'll put them as my fifth this year.
All right, and I think that could very well be the case. And then, so that leaves you with Butler at seven. I give Butler the slight nod over Marquette, so I'd go Butler six, and then...
Actually, you know what? I'll go Butler six, Georgetown seven.
Okay. All right, so it's exactly what I said. Like, it could, yeah. Switch either which way. And reasonable minds can disagree on the order of it, because there is the possibility they end, in whatever order you... It's possible,
right.
But I like Butler because they have Keelan Martin, they have Andrew Schrabitz, they have Tyler Wideman, they have some guys from last year that are there.
Well, they still have Lewis there, right?
Yeah, I was gonna get Tyler Lewis. Just needs to take control of that point guard role.
I was so bullish on him last year,
right?
He's got off to such a hot start for him.
Mm-hmm. And he needs to be better defensively. He doesn't have Roosevelt Jones who can take over the point guard role. But the good thing is they add Avery Woodson, from Memphis. Is he eligible? Yeah, he's eligible this year. That's another guy that can, maybe help out on the point guard role, but you would really want Lewis to take control of that because he's a gifted passer. He just needs to be better defensively. And the other big player they got coming in is Keaton Savage from George Washington, who sat one, is going to sat one, now he's going to play one, and he could help as a second scoring option to Keelan Martin.
Yeah, the Butler's an intriguing team to me because, like you said, they have a ton of talent, but they remind, it's almost like how we talked about with Syracuse. You lose two experienced guys who are there, and a guy like Cooney, you look at Butler, and that's Kellen Dunham. A guy mm-hmm. that was there right. for, not only were they both in college for 32 years, but mm-hmm. they could bail you out by hitting a 30-footer at the buzzer.
Yeah, like,
they always that safe spot.
Yeah, you just had experienced guys that just knew how to make winning plays.
Right.
Especially when you talk about a guy like Roosevelt Jones. So those, you really have to factor in heavily those two losses. Like, while they did add Savage and Woodson and Martin's going to, is the leading top returning scorer in the conference, you have to factor in how important it is to lose two guys like Jones and Dunham. I don't know it off the top of my head. I just remember it all year long. Like, Butler's record with Jones in the lineup is outrageous.
Yeah.
They are so much better. And that year he hurt his wrist, it was when they tanked that first year in the Big East. And granted, like, that was a bunch of guys that probably weren't Big East players playing Big East basketball, but it just goes to show that the year he comes back, they're right back into the tournament. That's just how good Jones, how important Jones was, all the things he did. He could defend a bunch of positions. He had one of the weirdest games of all time. Just
he reminded me almost of Dez Wells in the sense that for Maryland, Dez Wells was kind of that safety blanket, especially for Mel Trimble.
Exactly.
He's the one guy that you could throw the ball to and go 90 feet. And he could take you there 90 feet.
I think that's a good comparison to what he provided for that lineup.
Right, that's what I mean.
It's just like, like you said, a safety blanket.
He's not a traditional point guard, but he's gonna run the offense for you.
He's the most unconventional point guard of all time.
Right,
he couldn't shoot.
But he's gonna run the offense.
He wasn't fast. He had the ugliest layups of all time.
Yep.
He hit one three. He took one. I think he took two threes his entire career, and both of them were at the buzzer.
Yeah, and like.
Because he had to, and he made one of them. So I think we all agree with how with those top seven. Yeah, top seven.
Top
teams.
Seven.
We just disagree with the order of three of them.
Right, right.
But they're all in the conversation. I'd
be surprised to find two people that if you talked to.
I think the next
four, five, six.
I think seven. I think the next three are the teams that will finish in the bottom three. I just think the other ones. I think all those teams, the seven we mentioned. Like I mentioned with the ACC, have a chance to make the tournament. All said and done, I bet you five makes it.
Yeah.
Like the standard five teams make it. But six and seven will be on the bubble come Selection Sunday, like it's been the last couple years. The first year they got four teams in, but Georgetown and St. John's were in the conversation. The next year they got five in. They got five in last year. So I think that's going to be the situation again this season. But the bottom three, let's just get it over. DePaul, I think we're all peg is last, which I hate because, like, you want a team in Chicago to be good just because there's Billy Garrett. I love Billy Garrett as a player. I think he's a really cool person as well. He's just a great overall kid. And while I think he's going to will that team to a couple of wins this year in league, I just can't see them, you know, getting out of the basement, which I just hate because I really want to see Chicago do well. And to me, it's just like this program's just waiting on that arena to open, and maybe that gives them a chance to keep some talent at home. But yeah, Billy Garrett, just one of the better guys in college basketball. But I think it's just going to be another long year to cap a career that went pretty much unnoticed.
Yep. And he was a guy that was supposed to turn the program around. You look at last year and the year before when him and Tommy Hamilton and
Henry.
Yeah. And so it's unfortunate, but yeah, they're probably going to be in the basement. And then two teams who in Providence and St. John's are a little interesting. Providence is taking a massive step back after losing Dunn and Bentel. Mm-hmm. But they're a team that you can look and say they're a year away from being good again.
Yeah, no, they are. Like, that's the thing. Ed Cooley is a great coach.
Yep.
Like, he's a really good coach. But the thing about Ed Cooley is look at his tournament teams and what did they all have in common? Chris Dunn, the year before that. Chris Dunn, the year before that, Bryce Cotton. Just point guards that could make plays in key moments. And I think
speaking of tournament for Providence, a weird stat that I looked at the other day, they've never been higher than a 5 seed.
Wow. That's pretty incredible. Yeah, because they were an 11 and an 8 the last 2 years. I can't recall what they were. No, they were a six last year. They were eight last year, six before, and eleven the year before that. But I think Kyron Cartwright is a little bit smaller than both those guys. He's a lot smaller than Dunn. I think he's like 5'11", maybe 6 feet tall. So he's a little bit like a Cotton size, a couple inches shorter. But I like him as a player. I think he's going to be a steady point guard. I think he shows some leadership. He shows some toughness. He's shown flashes of what he can do. He started a few games here and there over the first 2 years. But at the end of the day, he's not Bryce Cotton and he's not Chris Dunn. So I think they're going to need the other guys around him to really step up. And this is the same thing I said with North Carolina. You're banking on a couple of people that you can't – while they have the potential, we just haven't seen it yet. Rodney Bullock is going to be written about as a potential breakout guy in every single preview, every single list you can think of the past month and into the next couple weeks. But he has been so inconsistent, and the same thing can be said for Jalen Lindsey. They are just wildly inconsistent, and I don't know if that's because Dunn and Bentel had the ball in their hands there more times than not.
But no, it's just because they're young college players.
There are times on the floor where Rodney Bullock, like, you forget he's there. So he needs to be – he'll be the focal point of the offense, and he's going to need to be really good. They're going to need that the kid, Isaiah Jackson, I think his name is, to be good. I think Emmett Holt – they played Charlton, that Canadian team, last night, the one that beats up on they beat up on teams doing their summer tours in Canada every single year. He looks good. He had a double-double, so he's like 6'7", but I think he could be a pretty good force on the front line for them. And Isaiah Jackson, he gives them another option on the wing, especially after they lose Junior LaMambo to transfer too. So they do replace some of the guys, but you're not going to replace Dunn and Bentel, but there are some newcomers that could have an impact right away. I've been jockeying it back and forth between whether I think Providence could finish eighth or if I want to take a flyer and believe St. John's is ready to sort of move up. Marcus Levet takes care of the point guard duties that fell solely on Federico Mussini, who's not a point guard, although he did an admirable job. It took a toll on him. He started to hit the wall later in that year.
Just his body language during games in February, he was shot.
He was exhausted. That's just my opinion of it. He's playing heavy minutes in a very competitive league against a lot of good point guards. They have outside of Georgetown, I think they have the next best front line when you look at two guys that are going to just protect the rim in Sima and Yakwe, and then they add that kid Richard Freidenberg from Germany.
Right.
He's going to take some time, I think, to he'll be a big part of this year. He'll you know either be a key reserve or he'll start. He could have an impact just because he's 6'9" and can shoot. He's obviously a better offensive player than both Yakwe and Sima. If you can get Sima and Yakwe to just do beelines down the floor and get a dunk or an offensive rebound, that's pretty.
We haven't even mentioned Shamori Ponds.
Oh yeah, Shamori Ponds. Like he's the best freshman in the league this year. Malik Ellenson. So they have some guys returning. That's going to be interesting. I'm going to be really excited to see what St. John's can do in year two. This could be another situation where they finish ninth and they're just looking ahead to get Justin Simon on the floor
right. With
Lavette and Ponds.
All right, so we'll wrap it up. Again, rapid fire. Okay, everyone's in agreement Josh Hart's going to be the preseason player of the year for
correct.
The Big East.
Correct.
Josh Hart doesn't win Big East player of the year. Who wins it?
Ooh, let's think about that for a second. Do you have one off the top of your head? I got to think about this for a minute.
I got to go Sumner. I love his game.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I love his game.
One of the Xavier guys makes sense.
Sumner
Blewett,
or
Blewett. Blewett or
I think Sumner.
Sumner
is going to have – while I think Blewett means a little bit more to Xavier because you can run him at the four, Sumner is just going to put up ridiculous stats.
And then you can go with a little bit of sleepers, Foster or Watson. Maybe probably Watson because he'll we've seen what he can do,
right.
And now he's got another weapon out there to work with. I'll go with So Hart, and then I can see any of those guys. Since you took Sumner, I'll take Watson.
Okay. What coach needs to win this year? Same question like we did the ACC. I think this one's a little more open. Because there's just not as many established coaches here.
It's tough, yeah. Because you got to look like Lato's in his second year. He wanted to bring more defense to that team. So it's going to take time to sort of get your guys in there. So Lato, I wouldn't say Lato just because he's new. Mullen obviously not because they're trending up at some point. I don't want to say. I mean, like Willard was the no brainer last year, but he's safe. I could see John Thompson III is not going anywhere.
Nope.
Marquette, Wojo, I feel like maybe Wojo kind of needs – he's not going to get fired, but I think Wojo might need to show that they can start being a player here. Again, he's got a young roster, but maybe you could say McDermott and just
who I was going to say.
That's
McDermott.
I was dancing around it. I was like, maybe McDermott, just to prove that
that was mine the whole time. Was
that it's not? It wasn't just Doug.
It wasn't just Doug. He has the he has the talent this year,
right?
He hasn't had a ton of success in the tournament. If they can get to the Sweet 16, Creighton, they have an amazing facility.
17,000 fans a game.
Right, great fan base. They pack the place. Great facilities. They have a good history. They have NBA guys.
Mm-hmm.
But McDermott's just never – and part – if you ask, I think, the common fan, a lot of people will say, oh, Doug McDermott. It's like, well, no, his dad.
Yeah.
It's just one of those where I think he needs to shed the Doug label.
It's funny that we're saying the dad needs to step out of the shadow of the son,
which is rare
in this scenario.
Rare.
But again, I don't think there's any coach in this conference that's in
McDermott's
any danger of losing their job.
If they finish fifth in the conference and whatnot, McDermott's not getting fired.
There's been some recent turnover as far as the coaches go, and the other coaches that haven't had turnover, they've just been really good. Like, none of these guys are in danger of losing their job, but I do like the McDermott thing. I think McDermott has to prove that,
I think that's the coach with the most pressure.
That's a good way of putting it.
That's how he put it
in our NBC previews about, it's not who was on the hot seat. It's about who's got the most pressure on him.
Right.
For the A-10 preview, I put the coach with the most pressure has got to be, Maurice Joseph.
Yeah.
He's inheriting a hell of a situation right now. Not only is he stepping into the middle of a controversy,
and it could make or break his career.
Yeah, maybe not that.
But it's just
that's pretty extreme. But
it's the first, you know, when he's going to that next job.
But it's not even that he's stepping into a scandal. He's stepping into a team that just won the NIT. They're pretty good.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. So if they win 7 games this year, it's going to be, well, maybe he's just a great assistant coach. We'll groom him again to be a head coach down the road.
Or he could easily just be a placeholder.
Right. So that's an interesting one. So I think we're in agreement with both the ACC and the Big East. The ACC, best conference, Big East, they did what they had the last year. Wide open after number 3, really number 4 was Seton Hall, but it wouldn't shock me if Seton Hall falls from the 4th spot. We'll be back again. We'll do this for all the Power 6 conferences. Follow the show at Storm the Court PC. Follow Terrence at Terrence, TERRENCE _ Payne, PAYNE.
Yep.
So follow him, follow the show, follow me if you're not already at Barstool Reegs. Anything that we missed?
No, I think we did. I think we covered all the bases here. All
right, we'll be back again likely later this week.